I've always been a big proponent of leverage, 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 being appropriately levered. And that's a good word and a bad word, right? So appropriate leverage is that you have enough leverage on the property to meet your financial objectives, but you don't have too much so that when there's sensitivity in this market, you're not going to get crushed.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big. Rob Finlay is a CRE investor and entrepreneur based in Charlotte, North Carolina. He spent the last 20 years bridging the gap between innovation and technology, and he's built a portfolio of CRE assets, a financial advisory and services firm, and 10 technology platforms. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, pleasure's mine. Three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Okay. Well, I grew up in real estate. So that's how I started. So since I could walk, all I can remember is commercial real estate. Second question, where are we now? We're in Charlotte, North Carolina. We have a portfolio that spans across the United States in highly structured products, as well as direct real estate ownership. And where we're going, we're big believers in innovation, technology, and staying ahead of the curve, looking around the corner.
Well, let's talk about looking around the corner. What are you guys doing right now to fortify your portfolio against inflation, the coming changes from the Fed? Give us the breakdown on what you guys are doing and what do you see coming?
I think you don't need to be much of a fortune teller to see what's coming, right? We've held off for a long time with our policies. Now we're looking at Fed that's raising rates. We're looking at basically a flat yield curve. So basically, you can borrow a 2-year at the same rate as you can 20 years. So we're definitely seeing changes in the market. Inflation is going to be a really interesting thing and a really tricky thing. People who have purchased assets in the last probably 12 months or have forecasted big rental growths, you might be okay because if the market can support it. Otherwise, I think if you're buying properties right now, you really have to look at two things. One is, can you, and with the volatility of the rates right now, you think about this, you're buying properties where 10-year treasury in the last 30 days has gone up 50 basis points. So if you adjust 50 basis points on your cap rates, look what happens to your value in order to make that work. So I think you're going to be looking at affordability and really trying to figure out if your rental increases that you've performed are going to meet that.
What would prevent? So my small mind, I see with inflation, obviously people's ability to spend has to increase in order to meet those rental rate increases. But if everything is increasing in price, I mean, it seems like at some point that rental growth just has to go up organically if there's more money in the market. Is that a poor summary?
I think inflation and real estate has always been considered a great inflationary hedge, right? It's like, yep, rental rates are going to go up. Everything's going to go great. There's a point at which, though, there's two things. How much can it go up? So there's rental rates based on a value add strategy, right? And which is come in, improve this property to B minus, and I'm going to make it a B plus. I'm going to get my value add that way. The other way is, you're right, just organic inflation, normal CPI. Problem is, your normal CPI now is 10%, right? It's 7.5%, 8%, 10%. I think we're forecasting it. So I think that's where you're going to start to see, can these properties meet 10% per year increases when real wages aren't increasing 10%? Then you start to add in the complexity of companies. I don't think we're going to be booming here. There's a lot of constraints in the market. So now, our employer is going to be able to increase wages by 10% in order for people to be able to afford rent. So affordability, which is here in Charlotte, is a huge factor. And having kids who just graduated from college and are trying to find places to live is a huge factor when looking at real estate right now, especially in multifamily.
Yeah, especially in multifamily. And maybe this was a bad statistic. So, you know, somebody could listen to this episode and come out and say, no, you're completely wrong. But somebody told me, and I haven't looked this up, in the Charlotte market. So they looked it up and there was less than 1,000 houses for sale on Zillow. Some crazy number. It's like in the entirety of the Charlotte MSA, less than 1,000 houses for sale.
Yeah. I think I heard a statement actually even better than that too, that there's, I think there was 1.5 million real estate agents or brokers, and there's only 600,000 homes for sale in the United States. Something crazy like that. Absolutely. The supply of homes is very small, and being able to build though is also very difficult as well, right? Because you have all the commodity price increase and there's a shortage of labor.
How do you take all of these variables, put them in the mix, and come up with a reasonable move forward solution?
There's a couple things. One is, real estate people tend to be pretty quick thinkers sometimes. And I think the things that I look at first and foremost is, I am agnostic to property type, right? I've invested in senior housing, assisted living, industrial office, you name it, we've invested in it. And so I think from a real estate investor standpoint, it's to maybe open up your horizons of opportunities, right? Look at things that multifamily people have done the same. They started looking at home parks and RVs and, you know, open up your horizon. The second thing is really look at the buy, right? It's now, this is about the buy. How are the assumptions? I still think there are opportunities. There's pockets of opportunities. There's locations of opportunities, but you've got to look far and wide to find those opportunities. And they might not be in Charlotte, North Carolina. They might be in somewhere in the middle of, you know, Stanton, Virginia, right? There could be in different areas. That's where you need to be looking.
Got it. That's interesting. What do you guys, I guess, when you say look in those different areas, yes, okay, you can look in different areas, but are there specific steps or actionable things that you guys are doing to prepare your portfolio for maybe, you know, decreased rent growth or maybe inflation above rent growth? Or what are some things you guys are doing strategically?
Yeah, well, I think because of our background in capital markets and debt advisory, primarily through our defeasance and derivatives business, we focus on appropriate leverage. I've always been a big proponent of leverage, 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 being appropriately levered. And that's a good word and a bad word, right? So appropriate leverage is that you have enough leverage on the property to meet your financial objectives, but you don't have too much so that when there's sensitivity in this market, you're not going to get crushed. We think, look, it's the same thing. You still have interest rates that are fairly low. The capital markets, you know, your Freddies and some of your CMBS lenders have widened out a little bit, but there still is a great time to lock in long-term rates, especially if short-term rates have just gone up. So appropriate leverage means getting the right amount of leverage that will support your property for the near and foreseeable future and be able to get some a decent return out of that. So we've reallocated our portfolio from leverage. That was the number one thing. And that's easy to do.
Easy to do. Can you define that?
Sure. I mean, you look at your portfolio, look at stress it and analyze. And that's a nice thing. Real estate, for the most part, and especially with debt optimization, it's all about numbers. I've got to pay off an existing loan. It's going to cost me something to pay off that existing loan. I'm going to get a new loan. And the benefit of having that new loan is going to be something, and it's going to be for a period of time. And so calculating that is really just simple math. Now, it gets a little bit more complex when you start looking at forward curves and what interest rates are going to be like in the future and so on and so forth. But for the most part, that's what we look at. So we try to tag and look at our future growth of our cash flows from our properties and sort of tie that back to debt. Do we have enough debt that's going to last us for the next 5 to 7 years and will provide sufficient leverage on our property, depending on whether or not the market goes great, or more importantly, to prevent its downside protection, right? If the market goes crazy again, hey, I can refinance, get out and go. If I'm stuck with zero or negative rental rate growth, where we might have in some markets, I need to make sure that I can cover my debt.
Right. And so what does sufficient debt mean? Is there a certain fixed number you guys are looking for? Are you deleveraging? Are you leveraging higher? What does that look like?
That's a great question, but almost impossible to answer. It's all case by case, right? Sure. So if I have a property that I've owned for a long period of time, I've got low leverage on it, and I think I'm in a fairly stable market, I might increase my leverage. If I'm in a market where, hey, you know what? We've had a pretty good run. Let's make sure that we're at the right amount to show some of that downward pressure. It's all about downward pressure. That's where I think right now it's probably you're at the last inning to be able to get some appropriate leverage on your property for this, you know, probably 12 months or so. That's really where we've focused on making sure, are we appropriately levered to come into and weather maybe some flat rental growth, some tougher markets.
Yep, absolutely. And I've heard, you know, it's sad that a real estate investor's inflation hedge is borrowing money at long-term fixed interest rates. I mean, if you're borrowing money at 3.5%, it's going up, you know, inflation's 10% a year. I mean, you're basically getting paid to borrow money. I mean, is that kind of part of the equation as well?
I think so. As long as, once again, it comes down to as long as you're realizing that 10% increase, right? That number only makes sense as long as your rental rates are increasing to that level. Otherwise, you're going to be on the negative side because your expenses might be going up to 10% are your rental rates. And I think that's really the key. And I think that's where real estate operators, that's going to separate the real operators from the partial operators. And that's going to be in this market, what can I do to really add value and increase rental income to my properties? Because in the past few years, it wasn't that hard. Let's be real. And I myself included, I own properties, buy them. Yeah, put them in. And yeah, I've done some stuff, but nothing to achieve the kind of results that we've had today.
Right.
Now you're going to be in a situation where it's not as easy to get that income. So that's going to really separate the real operators. Being able to really determine alpha and really being able to see that incremental return above what everybody else is doing is really going to be down to the operator.
Yep. And certainly we've, you know, benefited from the tailwinds as well. I've looked around and said that to many of my investors. It's like, you know what? We're not geniuses here. It's just sign of the times and we're along, we're riding the wave and it's great. But, you know, that's just a sign of where we are right now. Will it always be this way? Probably not. So Talk to us a little bit about your capital markets company. And then, you know, I'd love to hear about your defeasance company.
Well, so the capital markets is the defeasance company. So I started the company back in 2000. So CMBS loans that have been securitized and sold off, don't allow for prepayment typically. They need to stay in order to be able to sell the bonds. And so we created this process called defeasance. And defeasance has been around since 2000. And that business is also corresponding with our derivatives business. So we do a lot of hedges, swaps, things like that, which is actually very exciting now since LIBOR has gone away. And LIBOR has always been the standard index for which floating rate loans have been priced. Now LIBOR has gone away and you now have this SOFR. And SOFR in itself has a lot of complexity. So if you're a borrower and you're going to go get a floating rate loan, your index, that's that base rate, could be priced off of something that is not easily understood as LIBOR was. There's a lot of complexity in that market. It used to be, you know, hey, LIBOR is this, my spread is this, and that's what it's going to equal. Nowadays, if you're a borrower who borrowed under LIBOR a year ago, basically you're going to fall back to a different language. You're going to be converted into a different index. So you had LIBOR, you're now going to have SOFR or something else. So there's going to be a lot of complexity and a lot of interesting things that are going on in the market coming up next year when these loans have to be converted into SOFR. So any borrower, that's one thing for your listeners, any borrower out there that has a floating rate loan, you should probably look at your documents and figure out that that rate, that index that you have will change.
Do you think it will go up? Like this will cost the borrowers more money?
Oh, it could very well. It could be substantial. Because what's happening right now is when they did this fallback, when they said LIBOR is going away, a lot of people got together and said, okay, well, what rate do we take and put in its place, right? LIBOR, London Interbank Offered Rate, and that's gone. So now we have this SOFR, which is basically a secured overnight funding rate. And this rate, though, they try to make it fair. So there's actually a term SOFR rate. There's a fallback SOFR rate. And sometimes your loan documents might be silent to what actual rate or index that you will fall back to. So any existing loan that has LIBOR, the government has said LIBOR is going away. So LIBOR will go away. And then depending on your documents that written several years ago have no concept of SOFR or anything else, there's BSBY, there's other rates out there. So there is some complexity and then very well could increase the borrowing cost for a borrower.
How does a borrower protect against that from a loan written a year, 2 or 3 years ago?
They look at it, they look at their language, and they get with somebody who knows what they're talking about to represent them. I mean, it was funny. 22 years ago, we came out with this slogan, and defeasance, for anybody who's been through a defeasance, realize there's a lot of moving parts to it, right? It's a fairly complex situation where you're buying bonds to match the future cash flows and the stream of what the debt would provide. We named this company Defease with Ease, was sort of our slogan, a little moniker, you know, it's commercial defeasance, but the slogan was Defease with Ease. Well, we did the same thing and said, look, we're going to create SOFR with ease because there's going to be so much complexity again with what's going on in the market where we want to be that advisor to borrowers to help them through the complexities of a transaction. And that's what our 30 Capital Financial, which is our capital markets arm, we provide borrowers information on whether or not to defease their loan. And if they're going to defease their loan, we help them go through the process. Or, hey, do you need to look at getting a hedge or a cap or a swap or something like that? And we help them through our hedging advisory and our SOFR with Ease products.
Can you define what it is you mean when you say defease your loan?
So a securitized loan, it's prepaying your loan.
Right.
So if you have a Freddie Mac loan, you have a CMBS loan, those loans get packaged up and sold off as bonds.
Right.
Bondholders don't like redemption of principal, and so they don't want the redemption of their interest. Defeasance was created to prevent borrowers from prepaying their loans.
Right.
So in order to get out of one of those loans, a Freddie Mac or a CMBS loan, you have to go to the lender with a basket of securities that will match the future obligations. You're basically your monthly principal and interest payments all the way through the maturity. And that's what a defeasance is. Defeasance is basically matching cash flows, but it's a transaction. Requires somebody actually, whereas yield maintenance is a calculation, right? Somebody calculates what it, you know, there's language in your loan documents and you calculate it and there you go. Whereas a defeasance, you're actually doing the actual transaction. We actually have to go identify each individual bond. We have to go buy each individual bond. We have to go get accountants reports and create new successor borrowers and things like that. So the transaction itself is a transaction in itself.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's incredibly complex. And, you know, it's obviously these are expensive things to undergo, but other than going through that process, and usually this happens either when someone's going to refinance out of that loan or when they sell a property, right?
Correct. That's the only two times you do a defeasance is when you refinance or you sell. But once again, it comes to the benefit of why you have to evaluate it. You know, people look at prepayment penalties typically in a negative light, right? Because right. you have to pay something. But that's the resultant of being able to have lower rates going forward or more money. So it becomes, once again, it becomes this transaction. When we talked earlier about re-optimizing portfolios, that's the kind of analysis that we did. And it's the kind of analysis we do as a company for our clients, which is, hey, I've got this loan. I've got 3, 4, 5 years left. I have a 3.75% coupon. I've got this much equity in my property. Here are the loans that I can get right now. What do I do? And it becomes math.
Right. Absolutely love it. Rob, thanks for taking the time to come on today and share with us exactly what you guys are doing, what you guys see here in the markets moving forward, how you guys are protecting yourselves, as well as breaking down some of the more intricate nuances of defeasance, your Defease with Ease company. Lots of fun things you guys are doing. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you or your companies, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, just take a look at 30capital.com and you'll see all of our businesses and our portfolio and you can reach me there.
Fantastic. We will put this in the show notes, but is that T-H-I-R-T-Y or is that 30?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Spelled 30 out. Spelled out.
Yep. Yep. 30capital.com. Rob, thanks so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Great. Thanks so much, Sam. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.